You've heard it said, it doesn't have to be fun to be fun. With that in mind, join us for an insider's glimpse into all things trekking, safaris, and world adventure. From packing for your Everest base camp trek, to what it felt like for a cancer patient to attempt to summit Kilimanjaro, or visiting a village in the Sacred Valley of Peru, you will be inspired, informed, and ignited to get out there and start adventuring. Welcome, 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 everybody, to the Type 2 Fun podcast. My name is Mariah, and today we are going to talk about one of my favorite places that I've trekked, which is Nepal. And we have Nima here, who is embarks on the ground, front man, to tell us all about this wonderful country and what you can expect from trekking to Everest Base Camp. Hi, Nima, how are you?
Hi, morning, Mariah. Namaste to everyone. I'm really happy and glad to be, you know, speaking with Mariah and just talking about Nepal.
Yes, namaste. I love that. What else did I learn? I'm trying to think of what else did I learn. It wasn't Quechua, was it? What was it? No. Oh,
Dhanyabad, maybe?
Yeah, know that. And Malai Tikcha?
Malai Tikcha, yes. Malai Tikcha. Yes, I'm fine.
I'm fine. I had to say that a lot on my trek. Malai Tikcha, I'm okay. I'm all right.
Yes. That's a good line to say on the trek.
Yes. Yes. That was, I think, one I learned pretty quickly. So that's awesome.
That's great.
Yeah. So before we get into, I guess, you know, the trek and everything, I really would love to know your background and, you know, where you grew up and, you know, how you grew up.
Sure. I'd love to share. You know, this is what I do, you know, sharing what I know, my history, and you know, Nepal and everything. My family, I'm actually a third generation in the travel industry, and my family comes from the Everest region, in particularly the village called Namche Bazaar, which you probably trekked through as well, Mariah.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So my grandparents, you know, they came from Namche Bazaar. My father's, you know, father, he grew up in Namche Bazaar. I had a little different story. I was born and raised in Kathmandu, the city, the capital of Nepal. So a little bit different story with me. Of course, you know, things develop, change as well. The family's been in the travel trekking industry for last, you know, three generations, including myself. And my father, my grandfather actually, just a little bit story on that is my grandfather actually was in the 1953 Everest expedition with Hillary and Tenzing.
Whoa, that yeah. is cool.
Yeah, yeah. So
I didn't know we were talking to a celebrity here. That is so cool.
Yeah. So I have a little story. So this might get a little longer here, but
yeah, tell it.
But yeah, so my grandfather was in the 1953 Everest expedition. He was one of the few people who actually went up to South Col carrying loads twice on that particular expedition.
Wow.
He was a very good friend of Tenzing Norgay as well. That's how he got recruited in the expedition. Unfortunately, you know, he didn't, you know, go up, you know, climbing Everest, but my grandfather has a long history in the expedition field. Expedition is totally different than trekking and hiking. So you can imagine in the late 50s, you know, expeditions were very popular in Nepal, especially after, you know, the Everest expedition. And then my father, kind of inherited his skills, my grandfather's skills, everything. Then, you know, he continued and I came in, you know, learning my, you know, dad's skills and, you know, all the things that you need for, you know, in the travel industry, in the adventure, you know, trekking industry,
yeah.
I learned basically from my dad. So that's how, you know, that is my roots.
What, those are some strong roots there. I would be proud of that tree. What I guess, I'm just curious, what is kind of one thing that sticks out that you've been passed down learning in trekking and you know, taking people, you know, up Everest or even around the region?
I think one thing that really sticks out for me and my family and the family just being in the trekking industry in Nepal, is trying to be trying to be very loyal, you know, trying to be very giving in sense that, you know, as a leader in the industry, you know, you want to give opportunities to people, to the Sherpas, to the porters, to everyone. So that kind of really keeps me and my family really driving, you know, and being really passionate about, you know, in the travel, in the trekking industry in Nepal.
I love that. And do you feel like that kind of just embodies what a, you know, what a Sherpa is in general, as somebody who...
Definitely. I mean, you know, that's... you know, Sherpa, you know, by the way, I am a Sherpa as well. My last name is Sherpa. Yes, my last name is Sherpa. I, you know, people usually get confused with the word Sherpa. Is it a profession or, you know, what is it? So, you know, as a profession, as a title, Sherpa as a profession, you know, and what I do in Nepal, it definitely embodies, you know, my theory, my vision, my philosophy of, you know, trying to do better for, you know, for my people and trying to, you know, make sure that, you know, people get opportunities to, you know, the industry.
Yeah. And what a life growing up in Namche. I want to hear about that. My favorite part about Namche is the chocolate carrot cake at Herman Helmer's. Did you grow up eating that like every single day? Because I definitely would have.
No, I, like I said earlier, you know, I actually grew up in Kathmandu City.
You didn't move parents, over to...
Yeah, my parents grew up, in Namche, but...
Got it.
But you know, at that time there were no, you know, Herman's, I mean, there was no chocolate cake or, you know, any bakeries at all in Namche. It is nice and it is sad to see that, you know, the villages has, you know, developed. Of course, you know, good to see because, you know, it provides a lot of basics, you know, like structures for tourism in the areas. But of course, it is not what it is like back in the 80s or back in the 50s. Which we will probably eventually talk down the road right now, you know, about the difference between, you know, hiking to Everest or hiking to elsewhere, right?
Yeah. What I love most about each city that you come on along the trek is definitely the people. I didn't expect to see as many locals as I did. And gosh, that to me was just the biggest treat ever, was to experience, you know, the kids on their way to school, you know, on the same path that you're trekking on, you know, and stuff like that.
True. Yeah. I mean, you know, there is a saying, and people usually who come back say that, you know, they come next time for the people, you know, and not for the mountains.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that. So do you think, what do you think is like the main attraction of trekking to Everest Base Camp, other than obviously I'm sure Everest, but what do you hear from people of why they continue to come?
I think I've done this trek for last 10 years, like since 2004 until 14. I've tripled, and the interesting and the fascinating thing for trekkers, and also from a local, what I see is that for the trekkers is that I think the Everest provides a very a cultural aspect of trekking as well beside the mountains. You get to go see the monasteries that are several hundred years old. Probably see monks chanting in the monasteries. Definitely see people, local people in some villages. You might see local people's digging out potatoes from their field, mm-hmm. or probably just grazing their yak or things like that. So Everest is beside the trekking area, it is a place where people live there 12 months a year. So so that is what I think it's very fascinating, hiking in the Everest area, of course, beside getting to the Everest base camp.
I couldn't agree more. Like I was saying, that I don't know, I don't know what I expected, but I didn't expect to just be in people's lives, because they're there, going True. From town to town, or trading goods, or bringing food, to towns, or like Yes. you said, tending to their garden. Like I said earlier, I think my favorite experience was actually around Namche, when we Uh-huh. were headed up to the monument. Yeah, the monument, and kids were in their little school backpacks, headed to school right beside us, and I was like, "This Wow. is so cool!" You get to wave to Sure. them, and they're on their way to school, and they welcome you as you're a passerby, but they welcome you into a little piece of their world, and it's pretty Yes. cool.
Yes, like you said, you are really moving along in their lives as well, as you hike.
And I think it's really moving, like I said, that they allows not the word, but welcome it. They just they're like, yeah, you're here, you get to experience my culture and my country, and take that back and tell other people to come visit. They're just so proud Definitely. of their culture.
Definitely. Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah. So, and then obviously, the actual, the attraction of Everest Base Camp of itself is pretty moving. I think one, because you get to, sit at the base of, a pretty majestic mountain. But for me, it was the history of all the people that had stood, on those little, on those rocks in that area, and what, what they were preparing to do, that, I can't even imagine, summoning. But to me, when I was there, I didn't get to go in a time when there were any people getting ready to summit, but you could just feel it. The earth was, rich with that energy of, this is what normally people are doing in this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty interesting. So, can you explain what a typical day is like, in the trek, and what people can expect if they've, if they're looking to come trek to Everest Base Camp?
Well, a typical day kind of like starts around like 8 a.m. walking, leaving, your camp or, your tea house. At least below 4,000 meter, 4,000 meters is the tree line. So, most of the time some of the time you're hiking, through, some rhododendron forest, you're climbing up the hill, you're passing by some monks maybe, or some kids, like you said, of course it's not an easy trek, but, we make it happen. We make it easy enough that, people can actually hike. So you know, we do about like 3 hours of hike in the morning, break for lunch for about an hour and a half or so. And then again, you know, hike for about, you know, a couple of hours after lunch. And, Everest, going to Everest Base Camp in Everest is relatively, I mean, it's relatively a little longer trek, just because that, you know, there's elevation gain as well. That's how we make it, you know, look pretty easy and, you know, have fun as well along the trek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely have to stop for lunch because we have to get our Dalbot, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's the power.
That's the power, yes. We were calling it Nepali pizza and Nepali taco by the end of the of the trek.
Yeah, that's true. That's what people have up in the mountains and in Nepal as well. You know, people eat a lot of dal bhat, which is rice and lentil bean soup. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's a special way you have to eat it. You know, the rice comes in, you know, a little pile, and then the lentil bean soup comes. You have to pour it, and then you get, you know, some sort of crisp. I don't know, what is it that you like, you know, can dip and dig and an experience for sure.
True. True. Yeah. It's what people in Nepal eat, you know, like almost like, you know, twice a meal.
Mm-hmm. And then what else do we eat? Momos?
Yeah, we eat momos. Those are basically dumplings. You could find it in vegetables or in, you know, meat, you know, usually buff meat, which is a buffalo meat or a chicken, you know, and if you get really authentic, you know, I mean, and if you have a chance, then it's interesting to try out the potato pancake, which is made by Sherpas up in the mountains, which is actually not eaten sweet, but actually you pour on some hot sauce on top of, you know, the pancake.
Oh.
So it's there are few dishes up in the mountains that that they survive on, like the potato pancake, because the potatoes are grown, you know, widely up in the Everest area. A lot of my relatives eat, especially during the fall season, they eat stew, a Sherpa stew, you know. It's you know, potatoes and kind of like a pasta, you know, or a macaroni, mm-hmm. kind of like, you know, thing in the stew, and a lot of carrots, cabbage sometime. There are a few dishes that really are very local up in the mountain.
And it's very obvious this is hearty meals because you're going to be trekking and walking and living in high elevation. So your body needs, you know, rich, you know, calories, mm-hmm. nutrients, you know, things like that, which is energy, as you said.
Yes. Food is for fuel up in the mountains, you know, so it's good to have some food up in the mountains.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned, when we start our day that, you know, we're going to be starting most of the time from, a tea house. So, please tell everybody, you know, what is a tea house? I had never experienced anything like this. And again, it was not what I thought it was going to be. Explain what is a tea house.
Sure. So tea house, I don't know how it's been derived, but, back when my grandfather started, you know, back in the late 50s, I'm assuming that at that time there's no lodges and people basically stay at, you know, like trekkers usually stay at, you know, homes, you know, of the local people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming that tea house name is probably just kind of like derived from that sort of, style of accommodation. So, you know, most of the, and still now, you know, you could find most of the tea houses are basically owned and operated by the local people.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that, you know, that there's not been any migration from the lower land to the Everest, but still, you know, I think 80-90% of the tea houses are still owned by the local people up in the mountain. Mm-hmm. And these are their house, you know, these are their homes, you know, they live there, they sleep there. Their kids grew up, you know, in that house, you know, and they have, you know, spare rooms, maybe, you know, like, I don't know, back in the days, they used to have only maybe like three or four rooms. But nowadays, you know, a tea house would have like, you know, eight rooms to like, you know, 12, 13 rooms. And, you know, it's their house, you know, they have a small, you know, like, you know, a small farm or a small, you know, vegetable garden, you know, behind or in front of the, you know, house in their property. You know, it's basically a, you know, rock built, you know, house, you know, that is unlike, you know, unlike the US or unlike other countries, you know, it's not heated, it's not insulated, you know, and, you know, it's, you have a big kitchen, that they, you know, cook, you know, for the customers or probably for themselves. You know, they have a big dining space, a common space. They would have, you know, rooms that have, you know, two beds in a room. Okay, you know, most of the time you could probably find a very tiny rooms, you know, probably, you know, 9 feet by 7 feet rooms, you know, that has two tiny beds. Mm-hmm. You'd be lucky to have a window with a view. Yes. And, you know, probably a bathroom that you commonly share with other people, you know, down the hallway. And so that's kind of like how a tea house kind of looks like, you know, and then, of course, you know, people say, you know, typically people, if you go on a hike on a trail, then people typically they don't say tea house, you know, they'll probably name a lodge, a accommodation place as a lodge, you know, mm-hmm. let's say they might say Everest Lodge or Amadablam Lodge, mm-hmm. you know, but as we speak, you know, with the trekkers and, you know, we just say, hey, you know, we are going to this tea house, or, you know, we could probably say we're going to this lodge, you know, so I guess regardless of the name, a title for the accommodation, it really doesn't significantly, you know, differ from a tea house and a lodge, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you described it perfectly. You know, the only heat is in the common space, mm-hmm. usually by yak poo patties.
And, that's true.
And I remember being worried that I would not like that. And I'm here to tell you, especially uh-huh. by the end of the trek, I was like, we need more yak poo. We need it. We want the heat. And I would get so excited when they would bring it out and put it in the furnace to give us heat. You don't care where it comes from. So,
yeah. Well, you know, I think that has probably been one of the good thing up in the Everest region, where people are now not cutting trees. You know, it's a very sustainable way of heating, you mm-hmm. know. So, I mean, you know, we don't, every year we have up in the mountains, we get about 15 days or 20 days to really not cut the woods. But in wintertime, in especially, I think it's probably in January that the national park opens up, the forest basically for people to collect dead, you know, branches or,
right.
you know, So this cow dung, this yak dung is a very good alternative, you know, for heat.
I know, and I expected it to smell. I expected to hate it, and I'm here to tell you it does not, and I love it. And if it's the difference between a heated room and a non-heated room, I'll take the yak poo. I love it.
Yeah, so. I call it the yak chapati.
Yeah. I love it. So yeah, you described a tea house perfectly, and a place where I could always get lots of lemon ginger tea, which was my favorite. I was surprised at, because I don't really like tea, but that tasted like uh-huh. drinking a Starburst candy, like a lemon Starburst. It was great uh-huh. fuel, obviously sugar. Yes. You know, and citrus to get you going and warm you up. Yes. So no, it was great.
Yes.
So we're on our trek and we know what our typical day is like, and we're going to and from, you know, tea houses and lodges. You know, one thing, you know, when we're trekking is there's obviously lots of mountains around us and other regions. So, you know, what's the difference between a trek in the Annapurna region versus the Everest region?
Sure. Annapurna is a region that I've actually hiked as well. Similar to Everest, you know, Annapurna is a very big national park. And of course, people live there as well. So there is a variety of treks in the Annapurna area as well. I want to just give you a comparison of just one trek in Annapurna, which is the Annapurna Base Camp trek.
Okay.
Compared to the Everest Base Camp trek. So, you know, if you look at those comparisons, going to Annapurna Base Camp is much a shorter trek itself. You know, people could do in less than, you know, 14 days, mm-hmm. In country 14 days. Whereas, you know, for Everest, you have to commit at least, you know, 20, 21 days, you know, in country. You know, I think significant thing I've seen while hiking in Annapurna is that compared to Everest, you know, it very less provides that religious aspect or that cultural aspect of the hike. You know, mm-hmm. like in Everest, you have monasteries, you know, you have gombas. In Annapurna, you don't have that, you know, like fascinating, you know, monuments or fascinating monasteries, right?
Wow.
So you are still hiking through the villages. In Annapurna, it is very much diverse because the Annapurna trek nowadays, you know, a couple of the Annapurna treks nowadays have access to road. So there is a much diverse group of people that you can find in the region compared to the Everest area, where you could find, you know, very little diversity, you know, of people.
Right.
But if you're hiking in the Annapurna during the festivals, during the Hindu festivals, then that's much fascinating, because a lot of the people in the Annapurnas are Hindus, primarily Hindus. So they celebrate the lighting festivals. They celebrate the Hindus' famous festival of Dasai. So if you're around that festival hiking, then that could be pretty neat, you know, in Annapurna.
Mm.
So I can probably dig out like, you know, three or four of those comparison.
Do you have a favorite?
Everybody asks that when I hike as well. So that's tough. This last October I did a hike with my kids, you know, up to in the Annapurna area. We did a shorter hike. It was for about 4 days, 3 nights.
Mm-hmm.
They enjoyed it. You know, they enjoyed it a lot. Yeah, you know, we had a great view of mountains. You know, we chatted with, you know, a couple of local people that were grazing their, you know, their cattles, you know, so we had a great time. I mean, it's very hard. I mean, I come from Everest area. You know, it's very hard. I think I'd probably lean to Everest. In a scale of, you know, 10, then I'd probably say Everest is probably about 7 or 8, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then Annapurna is probably about 6 or 7.
Okay, you know? So they're close.
So I don't have a favorite, but that's my comparison.
I asked our guide if he had a favorite mountain region too, and you mentioned it earlier in our talk. He said his favorite was Amadablam.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a beautiful mountain too.
I just like to say it, Amadablam. I just kept with him and saying it wrong, and still didn't make us.
No, you've pronounced it pretty well, Amadablam. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So what do you think surprises people? You know, we've actually talked about this a lot in our talk here, what, you know, what surprised me, what surprised other people, but Do you have anything that you hear often about, you know, what surprises people about Nepal?
First timers, just the big chaos, the organized chaos in Kathmandu.
Yeah.
Like you get off the airport, you hit the road, the traffic, the chaos, you know, everything is going fine, you know. There's no accidents, there's no bumper to bumper accidents at all, you know. So it's I think that for first timer travelers to Nepal, I think that that's like wow, you know, how is it happening, you know, how is it moving, and just the colors and the people, mm-hmm. and you know, the motorbikes, the dogs, the cows, the honking. It is you know, it's a, I mean, I'm you know, sometime when I travel, you know, to US, and when I get back home, I'm also, I mean, for a couple of days, I'm like surprised at how things are moving, you know. So, that's kind of like wow, you know.
You definitely hit the nail on the head there. It organized chaos, you know.
Yeah.
You're just sitting there looking and going, everybody knows where they're going. They're in nobody's way. They're going as fast as they can, and yeah, it is. It's complete chaos, but the energy is so great. No one's mad. No one's, you know, because I would equate the same kind of energy almost maybe to like New York City, you know. And it's completely different though. You know, in Nepal, everybody's, hi, how you doing? Excuse me, beep, beep. You know, I'm going, and there's horns and everything. And but the energy, you know, in other cities is definitely different, but it's palpable. You can feel it. And you kind of sit back for a second and you're like, I don't know that I belong here, because I don't know where I'm going. And and I don't know, you know, it's fun though. I agree. That surprised me.
I think that first impression, that's like, oh wow, you know, this is, I wanna explore more. You know, that sort of ignites the travelers to, you know, like explore more of the country. Agreed. Right?
Agreed. Yeah. And then one thing I loved that I don't know why it surprised me, but how much of the religion is everywhere. And you get, and it's just open and free and and part of the earth there too. It's just, oh, I loved it. You know, I love experiencing other cultures, and I love it when culture immerses in their religion and food. Those are two things I love. So I definitely felt that in Nepal.
Yeah, I mean, you just said it correctly, that you know, monuments, that culture there, and the food. I mean, you know, you're driving through the city, or you're walking through a street. You know, you could see a small temple, or you could just see a small stone that has, you know, those red powders, the tikas, and people pray on that, you know, rock stone. You know, so it's, you know, every footstep that you take, you know, it's just so fascinating to see that you know, these are blended, you know, like in the lives of people, and just outside, you know, exposed, you know, so that people can really, you know, locals can visit and locals can pray and so forth. And as a traveler, you see that happening there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. I love how that's, you know, kind of out and about. That's definitely not an American thing, you know.
True.
You see our church, and you know, it only happens in there, you know. But here, it's a rock on a path, you know, with a prayer written on it, or it's a, you know, a statue or a monument, or you know, prayer flags everywhere, or you know, it's just, it's everywhere. It's a part of the world, and I just think that's really cool. It's comforting in an interesting way. And I think, you know, you mentioned this, you said, you know, when people come back multiple times, you said an interesting line, they come back, they come the first time for Everest, and what did you say?
Yeah, they come first for the mountain, then the second time they come for the people.
Yeah, I love that. So true. Well, Nima, I know we're getting towards the end of our chat, but is there anything that you want to tell people out there who have either never been or have been once and they, you know, they need to come back? Anything you want to tell them?
Sure. You know, it's, I mean, Nepal is a fascinating, you know, destination. I mean, I was born, raised there, and you know, I've traveled, you know, many places around the world as well. I mean, a couple of places around the world, and something that, you know, sticks to me, to my country, to Nepal is just that, you know, it's a very cultural, you know, area. It's a very cultural destination, and as a traveler, you know, I mean, beside the mountains, you know, I definitely encourage people to travel to Nepal, you know, and you know, make friends, you know, explore Nepal. There are a lot of places. If you're a hiker, there's a lot of places to hike around as well, and it's a wonderful place, you know, to be what you want to be, right? I mean, mm-hmm. out adventuring.
I love it. Well, friend, thank you so much for sharing a bit about you and your country with us. And I think you're right. I can't wait to go back. I went once for the mountain. Now I have to go back for the people. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, we'd love to have you back.
Namaste.
Namaste. Thank you so much, Mariah.
Remember, it doesn't have to be fun to be fun. Thank you again for joining us on the Type 2 Fun podcast. We will see you again on the next adventure. But in the meantime, check us out at www.embarkexplorationco.com.